Funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. How well do you communicate? In a world that runs on information, the words we choose can convey precisely what we mean to say or create unnecessary and even expensive confusion. Crafting spoken and written messages that work for us is well worth the time and effort we spend. And for both hours of Think Today, we have one of the country's foremost experts to help us out. Brian Garner has served as editor-in-chief for Black's Law Dictionary since 1995. His latest books are Garner on Language and Writing and the third edition of Garner's Modern American Usage and Making Your Case, The Art of Persuading Judges, written with Justice Antonin Scalia. Brian, welcome back to Think.
Thank you, Chris.
Okay, so you have two different quizzes today, one for each hour, right? Test our abilities here. Why don't you start with the first round, and then we'll get the answers at the end of this hour.
All right. We have two three-question quizzes, and the first three questions are about the verbs lie and lay. Now, you always take the quiz, don't you?
I always take the quiz.
Along with all the listeners. So, the first question, his genius lay or laid dormant for many years? His genius lay or laid dormant for many years? Number two, please lie down or please lay down, which is correct. Please lie down or please lay down.
Okay.
And number three, if he had lain quiet, he wouldn't have been hurt, or if he had laid quiet, he wouldn't have been hurt. If he had laid or lain quiet, he wouldn't have been hurt. So those are the three grammar questions, and then three spelling questions.
Okay, the spelling ones are the ones I like.
Spell the word anoint and the word ecstasy and spell all right. All right. Ah. Those are the three. So we'll give those answers at the end of the hour, and then we have a second quiz for the second hour.
Cool. All right, so everyone's got those, and there's no prize for getting the quizzes correct, but you will feel great about yourself, and then you can take them home and challenge everybody you live with. So you've just issued the third edition of Modern American Usage. Generally speaking, what needed updating?
Well, I could come up with new editions every year. It's not that the language changes so rapidly, although it does in many ways change pretty rapidly. Friend is now commonly used as a verb. Somebody's raised the question with me just this morning whether you should befriend somebody on Facebook as opposed to friending somebody on Facebook, which is kind of silly because that'll never work. But the language changes. But more important, I'm able to do more research. And finding more examples and being able to write a little more expansively enriches a new edition of a book like this. So I probably added 40% more material over the second edition.
Want to let everybody know that throughout the hour, we're going to take your calls and your questions a little earlier than is customary, because I'm sure that you have many. The telephone number is 1-800-933-5372. You can also send things via email to think@kera.org. So one of your sources for figuring out how people are using language today is, and I know you travel a lot, to go from one market to the next, pick up a copy of the local paper, and then do you go through with a highlighter or a red pencil? What do you do?
Well, I do like marking local papers, and I especially like reading letters to the editor, which are generally in local papers sort of embarrassments to the community in terms of literacy. But I do that, and I use a lot of databases, the Oxford Corpus, which is a wonderful linguistic database. And then Westlaw and Lexis give me full access to newspapers all over the country. So it's my own reading, but it's also being able to search for certain grammatical and word choice problems. There are about 10,000 little viruses in the language. And these viruses get launched, and then they travel, and some of them become epidemic, and some of them become pandemic. And what originated as a mistake can ultimately become correct, although there are people like me who fight against them.
You're like the Edward Jenner of language. You're sort of old school when it comes to all of this. Some people now, you talk about this in the book, there's people called descriptivists who look at language and say, whatever people are saying must be right.
Yeah, I just don't agree with the idea that if a native speaker of English says it, it must be correct. Native speakers make mistakes. And it's so weird that in language of all realms of human activity, anybody would argue that this is simply a tool that cannot be misused. Any tool can be misused.
I want to talk about one of the things that my husband and I constantly argue about. My chief, most irritating verbal mistake that I make all the time is about bring and take. And this makes him insane. Will you talk about the correct ways to use those two words?
Well, it's actually a little more complicated than one might suspect.
Oh, I know. I read the entry. I'm waiting for this.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and of course, none of this is planned. It's all unscripted. So I just have to try to remember what I said. But it has to do with perspective. And if you're asking somebody to come toward you, it's bring. And if it's a matter of having something accompany you to a distant place, it's take. So if you're going on a trip to New York and you're bringing you're taking a child. you're taking a child. It's very easy to get into fuzzy areas and even sloppy speech, but you're taking a child with you to New York. On the other hand, if you live in New York and you're going back home, you probably say you're bringing the child to New York. So it's a subtle set of points, but it's not as simple as the little rules that a lot of us grew up with.
And this is one phrase where certain people would argue that everybody knows what you're saying, so it's okay. But ultimately, it's kind of a slippery slope with a lot of words that we do this to.
Well, this idea that intelligibility is enough, that just the fact that somebody can figure out what you mean and therefore it's adequate communication is preposterous. It flies in the face of what normal speakers of English believe and think, and you certainly could have trouble getting hired if that's your attitude. As long as I'm intelligible, that's good enough. No, it's not, because a lot of what language does is to signal to others your level of knowledge, of credibility, of education. And so we're all sizing people up linguistically all the time. You wouldn't have your radio show if you were not able to handle the language very capably. And by the way, the way you handle the language is very admirable indeed.
Occasionally. Thank you. 1-800-933-5372 is our number. We've got our first call now from Jennifer in Grapevine. Hey, Jennifer. Jennifer, hi. Are you with us? Jennifer?
Hello?
Hi. Go ahead, please. Oh, we lost Jennifer. Okay, well, she had a question about, according to my notes, an historic event or a historic event?
That's an interesting one. Mark Twain wrote a little bit about that, and Twain said back in the late 19th century that if you're a red-blooded American, you aspirate the H. It's a consonant sound, and it's a historical. For some really bizarre reason, a lot of people write an historical, which might make sense if we were Cockneys who dropped the H's.
But an historical.
Yeah. But in American English, the H is pronounced, so it should be a historical. Interesting thing is all the British and American established authorities agree on that point.
When did female stage performers become actors and not actresses?
I think it began probably in the 1970s. It really spread in the 1980s. But we have a series of double standards on point, and or exceptions to the rule anyway. I think Oscar awards. Don't they still have best actress, not best actor with a combined category? So there are exceptions, but a lot of the ESS forms are dropping from the language. Increasingly, you rarely hear stewardess anymore. Of course, it's flight attendant, because there are many male flight attendants, and I think rarely would you hear waitress. At least I think waitress has not gone as far as stewardess, but it is dying, and there's nothing odd about saying waiter for female waitstaff. I do not like these experiments with things like Waitron.
It sounds like you have a robot coming to your table to bring you a baked brie.
That's right. Yeah.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's go next to Terrell and speak with Francis. Hello, Francis.
Hi. I was wondering if the speaker could go over the use of less and fewer, because I seem to see a lot of misuse of that in print and on TV, and it drives me crazy.
That is a good one.
Sure. Well, less is for amounts, fewer is for countable things, so count nouns. You say fewer people but less salt. It's really a fairly straightforward distinction. But as changes spread in the language, and as I say, they can become epidemic and even pandemic, I've identified five stages of language change. The first is that it's a simple mistake, and just a few people make it. Then it spreads to as many as half the population. So stage one misusage, just a few people make it, but it's widely rejected. Stage two, it spreads to maybe half the population, but the better educated half of the population abstains from it. Then it spreads even further to a clear majority of the population, but the very best educated people abstain from it. And then it becomes virtually universal, and not every misusage goes this far, but it can become virtually universal, and the only people who abstain from it are just diehard holdouts. And finally, it becomes truly universal, and nobody objects to it anymore. So I think of irregardless, for example, as being a stage two misusage. Hopefully is probably a stage four misusage, and that means essentially that it's ultimately going to become standard American English and fully acceptable, but it still has a whiff of a bad odor, don't you think?
Hopefully, instead of saying, I am hopeful that.
Or just, I hope, yes. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Brian Garner is with us. He is editor-in-chief of Black's Law Dictionary and has a variety of books out right this moment, including the third edition of Garner's Modern American Usage, Garner on Language and Writing, and Making Your Case, The Art of Persuading Judges, written with Justice Antonin Scalia. Jeff Whittington is with us now. We have run a little over time, so we will hopefully, no, I am hopeful that. I hope that. Okay, I'm at stage four on this one. I hope that you will make up the time for us and make your call and your contribution right now at 1-800-456-5372. Jeff Whittington, this is a big day for Thank You Gifts.
It is a big day, and we're really, really excited to have Brian Garner in studio for this show. And I know that we've been getting emails, actually, over the last couple of weeks after we publicized he was going to be here. People are excited. The phones are full. Please do me a favor and call that other number as well, 800-456-5372, or go online to KERA.org. And we do have some thank you gifts to talk about, Chris. At the $120 membership level, we can thank you with a copy of Brian Garner's Garner on Language and Writing. It's a great reference, and it's available to you when you join at the $120 membership level today. What I'm really excited about is the brand new third edition of Garner's Modern American Usage. I consult this book, or the last edition, every week on the Anything Show. When there's a usage question or an origin question, I've read whole passages, of course, attributed appropriately to you from the book. That's yours when you join the station at the $225 membership level today with our thanks. So please call 800-456-5372 or contribute online at KERA.org.
Fortunately, the transaction to become a member or renew your membership only takes a couple of minutes. So if you pick up the phone right now or go online right now, you can get all this taken care of before we come back on the air with Brian in about 3 minutes. The telephone number again is 1-800-456-5372. You can also go to KERA.org. If you have a question about something we've mentioned about one of the thank you gifts, the folks on the phone should be able to help you out and give you the information you need. So again, the telephone number 1-800-456-5372. You can go online to KERA.org. Back in just a couple of minutes with Brian Garner.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education, who can help you get ahead in today's tough economy. Hundreds of courses begin weekly this fall. Online at smu.edu/CAPE.
Thank you. You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is editor-in-chief of Black's Law Dictionary, Brian Garner. He has multiple books out this year, including Garner's Modern American Usage, the third edition, and Garner on Language and Writing. If you would like to join the conversation, you can call us at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. That might be your best avenue right now because it looks like all of the phone lines are full. If you would like to have a copy of one of Brian's books, you can call 1-800-456-5372. Talk to the folks on the phone about the appropriate membership level that will allow you to take that as a thank you gift, or make your gift to KERA and go out and buy Brian's books. We are not trying to sell you these books. We just want to make sure that you receive a copy and try to entice you to support KERA. I want to talk to you for a minute about what you call vogue words and why you find these so troublesome. And it's funny because I was going to use the word problematic, but I figured that you might object.
Well, that is a bit of a vogue word. Vogue words are words or phrases that just sort of take off, and they're suddenly on the tip of everyone's tongue. And you start sounding like a sheep, really, when you spout vogue words. So anytime I hear an expression that seems to be trendy, I immediately decide I'll never use it. Well, an example would be a couple of years ago, think outside the box.
Sure.
Now, when I hear somebody today say, we've got to think outside the box, it is, of course, I have a poker face about this, but it's a turnoff. Because what happens is, people can take these phrases, ready-made phrases, and they begin to displace original thought. And that's exactly what you don't want to have happen.
And the other culprit there is I-Z-E words, incentivize, and things like that, where you just add that to the end of a word and make it sound somehow trendy, but not in a good way.
That's right. Although there are, I admit, occasionally some terms that will become suddenly voguish, but are sort of useful. A term like repurposing. Now, I don't know of another word that means to take an existing product and package it anew for business purposes other than repurposing. That's actually a useful little word. But I also think it is not one that is extremely widely used.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. We'll go next to Plano and speak with Cynthia. Hi, Cynthia.
Hi. Great conversation. My question is about the word impacted. Is that a vogue word?
Well, are you having trouble with your wisdom teeth?
Well, exactly. That's but I hear newscasters and politicians constantly talking about something that has impacted the economy, and it seems inappropriate.
Yes, well, that is a very unfortunate, I would call it a stage four misusage. I'm sure I labeled it stage four in modern American usage. It is probably a compromise for people who don't know when to say affect, A-F-F-E-C-T, and effect. Affect, of course, and I'm overpronouncing the word, but affect is the verb. Effect is the noun, generally speaking, with some rare exceptions. And so some people don't know which word to use, and so they just say impact, which is as if it's better off to get it wrong no matter what. But traditionally speaking, impacted should be used only in reference to wisdom teeth.
We have an email here from Nancy in Southlake who says, besides being very frustrated when I hear the word coupon pronounced coupon instead of coupon, the use of fun instead of so much fun drives me nuts. For example, playing in the park was so fun, as opposed to playing in the park was so much fun.
What is her name?
Nancy.
Well, Nancy is a snoot. I'm a snoot. I think you're a snoot. Snoots are syntax nerds of our time. People who know language, pay attention to language, care about words and their distinctions. And the two points that Nancy brings up are excellent examples, where the very most educated speakers of English say coupon, not coupon. And the very most educated speakers of English would not use fun as as an adjective. They'd use it as a noun. You can have fun, but you don't have a fun time.
It strikes me as very interesting that for a long time, we were all advised to avoid being too wordy and too florid in our prose. And now people are so busy texting and tweeting and sending little tiny emails with a sentence at a time. Are we not using enough language?
Well, it seems to me that those very brief messages, very terse messages, are probably appropriate to the media in which they appear. So I think it can be useful. And I like the ability to have my wireless device, and I'm able to actually conduct business during a 90-second downtime. I may even be lecturing or teaching, and everybody has an exercise, and I can respond to an important business message. Somebody just needs a yes or a no. I think it's an excellent innovation, and these very short messages seem appropriate.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. You can also send email to think@kera.org. Next on the phone in Duncanville, we find Duane. Hello, Duane.
Hello. I hope I'm not being snooty here, but
I think that's a good thing.
All right. I'm quite interested in the way people use or how they connect serial verbs, like always saying, I want to try and go someplace rather than try to go, connecting with and rather than to. You know, they would say, I want to try and go. But, you know, you substitute attempt with try, and no one would say, I want to attempt and go. And there's, I find certain verbs quite often when they're in serial, people seem to connect them with and rather than a series of infinitive verbs. And I've actually asked grammarians or grammaticians or whatever about this, and I get nothing but conflicted statements. So wondered what the expert had to say.
Well, Duane, you do sound like a snoot, and a snoot is a good thing to be. Try is a word that in particular is often followed by and it's fairly old, and it's fully established now in British English. So it's stage 5 in British English. But in American English, editors typically would not let that pass in what is supposed to be polished prose. So it's probably stage 3, maybe stage 4 in American English. But the very best polished writing would not say try and do something.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. You can also send email to think@kera.org. John in Frisco asks, are the following phrases interchangeable? With respect to and as respects.
Yes, but more typically the second would be as regards. There are a number of these, sometimes a little bit wordy expressions, with respect to, in regard to, or in dialect, people say in regards to. It should be in regard to, with respect to, as regards. As respects, I think, is not nearly as common. But that's a little bit of a literary expression, as regards. Most people in America today don't use that.
You've written in the book and something that really interested me, which is people's tendency lately to use the word is twice in the same sentence, although it's not attached to the beginning of a sentence that would require it. In other words, they'll say, the problem is that instead of saying what the problem is, do you understand what I'm saying? Can you talk about that a little bit?
There's this little almost stammering effect with is, and it seems to be a contagion in the language. So you're right. I think it is so-and-so. People will say is twice. There's a little essay about it with I think a fairly arcane explanation for what brought it about. But if the noun clause, what it is followed by a be verb, then it's going to be is. What it is, as you say. And it makes sense in that context, but otherwise it's something to be avoided.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next to Dan in Fort Worth. Hey, Dan.
I was interested in words that have kind of evolved from their original meaning to mean almost its opposite. And what comes to mind is the word moot, as in moot court. It seems to me that the origin was sort of a point that was arguable. You could argue one way or the other, but it seems to have evolved to mean something that is totally irrelevant and should be discarded. Like healthcare would be, the case for healthcare would be moot, one person would say, and one listener would say, well, yes, that's true. You could make one argument for it or another argument for it, but another listener would say, well, I guess it's completely irrelevant.
Yeah, that's a good example. The word has evolved in just that way, and it's because of law schools, believe it or not. Moot court was originally a court to moot cases, that is, to argue about hypothetical cases, but it's a debatable point. But because moot courts are purely hypothetical, there's nothing actually at issue there, it evolved into, the meaning morphed into, it doesn't actually matter. It is hypothetical only, and it's sort of pretend.
The tricky one for me is the word peruse. I'm often asked to peruse something, which can mean go over it very quickly, or it can mean read very carefully. And I always assumed that the meaning was read it very carefully and miss nothing, but people use it both ways.
Yeah, well, you're a snoot, and snoots, traditionalists would think of peruse as being a very close study, not a hasty sort of slapdash reading.
Brian Garner is with us, and we will talk more with him about words and language and how we use and misuse them. Right now, Jeff Whittington has joined us. Jeff, welcome.
Hey, Chris. Thank you so much. What a fascinating discussion. A lot of people are very excited on the phones. We're getting lots of email. And the great thing is we have Mr. Garner for 2 hours today, so we're very excited about that. So you have plenty of time to make your call to 800-456-5372. And I've got some very, very exciting news. Brian Garner brought in a couple of very special volumes today, and he brought in two copies of Black's Law Dictionary, the 9th edition. One is the regular edition, and one is the deluxe edition of the book. And we are offering each of those autographed by Brian Garner at the $350 membership level. So you've got to call 800-456-5372. You can't do this online because you've got to talk to somebody because there's only two of these. And that's not all. We have two very special copies of Making Your Case, The Art of Persuading Judges, which is co-written by Justice Antonin Scalia and Brian A. Garner, and they're both autographed by both authors. And those are each available as well at the $500 membership level. These are going to go super fast, so if you, you know, I would say if you have a friend who's an attorney who might really treasure an autographed copy of this book by Antonin Scalia and Brian Garner, call 800-456-5372.
Of course, in this case, your contribution is really going to help KERA continue to provide this programming for you. But just a couple of months ago, Jeff, we did a show about first edition signed copies of books and how quickly they become valuable.
We did indeed.
You may want to have that in the back of your mind when making your generous contribution to KERA.
And of course, the source material for these conversations are sitting right here in front of me. Garner on Language and Writing, your copy available at the $120 membership level today, and Garner's Modern American Usage, your today when you join at the $225 membership level. Listen, we're going to finish this drive in the next hopefully 24 hours or so. Hopefully it won't go longer than that. And your call right now, your picking up one of these great incentives to join the station will really help spur things along. And we can wrap this up maybe by midday tomorrow. So call now, 800-456-5372. And you can get the Modern American Usage and the Language and Writing online at KERA.org as well.
Jeff and I talk about this all the time, even off the air, but we're very fortunate to have an audience, people like you who enjoy this content as much as we do. You know, we are snoots here, and we love to sort of examine this sort of thing, particularly with the country's most renowned experts. Brian Garner happens to live in Dallas, but is respected all over the country, all over the world. People argue about his ideas. He is a primary source when it comes to deciding how the language should be used. used. He's the sort of guest that we're privileged to be able to bring to you. That's all possible. A locally produced program in your home market is possible because of contributions from people like you who listen to the station every day, recognize the value, and realize that it doesn't happen for free, that in fact there are expenses to be met in order to continue providing this programming. 1-800-456-5372 is our telephone number, or you can go online at KERA.org and make a contribution.
You know, I was listening. I actually heard about the new edition of Garner's Modern American Usage and got really excited. And you know what I heard about it? I heard about it on Away With Words, a show we air right here on KERA. It's produced nationally, and Grant Barrett, one of the hosts, was kind of freaking out about how excited he was about the new edition coming out. I got excited. I was driving probably back from lunch or something, and immediately got on the phone and called Brian's office and said, hey, we it's been a while, and we'd really like to cover this and let people know there's a new edition of Modern American Usage out. And, you know, we're hoping that you appreciate the fact that he's taking time out of his schedule, and he's not an easy guy to book. He's traveling all over the world giving presentations and talks and lectures. So to get Brian Garner here for 2 hours here at the end of the membership campaign is a real treat, and hopefully one that you will show your appreciation for by calling 800-456-5372. Let me mess up the grammar as much as I possibly can there.
You won't continue.
That's right. With an online contribution at KERA. I will say this. My pet peeve is, and I hope that your pledge is forthcoming, and that doesn't mean that I want you to be forthright by saying that you are a supporter of the station. It means that I want you to call. I want you to do your part.
I think it means you want.
Uh-oh, we don't have.
Can we turn Brian back on?
Yeah, he's on four.
I think it means you.
Here, speaking of my mic.
There we go.
I think it means you want them to call forthwith.
Forthwith, yes.
You know what's funny? Is as Jeff was saying this, Brian started squirming in his chair, like, ready to dive into this. We know how many of you are ready to dive into this conversation. Our phone lines are literally full. There are no openings right now. If you want to get to us for the conversation, you can do that via email to think@kera.org. To make your contribution to KERA, you also go to kera.org. There's a support button. You can look at the thank you gifts. You can decide what you want to do. If you are interested in one of those two copies of Black's Law Dictionary or two copies, signed copies of Making Your Case, The Art of Persuading Judges, that needs to happen on the phone.
Yeah, we've got two copies of Black's Law Dictionary, the ninth edition, autographed at the $350 level, and we've got two autographed copies of Making Your Case, signed by both Justice Scalia and Brian Garner, available at the $500 level. So those are going to go really fast. So call 800-456-5372. You can pick up one of those as your thank you gift.
Thank you so much for your participation in the show and also in the fundraising campaign. Once again, the phone number, 1-800-456-5372. Back in a minute with Brian Garner.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education, who can help you get ahead in today's tough economy. Hundreds of courses begin weekly this fall. Online at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is editor-in-chief of Black's Law Dictionary, Brian Garner. He has a multitude of books out this year, including Garner's Modern American Usage, the third edition, and Garner on Language and Writing. You can join the conversation by sending email to think@kera.org or by calling 1-800-933-5372. Next, we go to Keller and speak with Donald. Hey, Donald.
How are you?
Great, thank you.
My question has to deal with the word bad and its proper usage. A friend of mine says that to use the word bad in the context of I feel bad for him or I feel bad that this person has died. And I've argued that you don't feel bad, you feel badly. And who's correct in this situation?
Oh,
I don't know.
Donald, I hate to give you bad news, but feel in that context is what is called a copula, or it's a verb that requires a predicate adjective, and you feel bad. To say I feel badly is probably a stage three misusage, and literally speaking, that should mean you're having trouble with your tactile sense.
And that's the same problem with I don't feel well, right?
That's right. I don't feel good. Although I don't feel well can be
depending
if
on
you're
how
feeling
you use well.
Sick.
Yeah.
Yeah. You could be well as an adjective, meaning I'm not feeling well. That's fine. It's not fine not to feel well, but it's fine to say that.
All right, I'm going to skip this one, this email, up in the chronological order because it's something that makes me crazy. The idea of saying that something happened by accident. And now you hear, as Art in Flower Mound says, a lot of adults even saying it happened on accident.
Yeah, that is the most bizarre little, I don't know what you call it. It's a little virus that has sprouted in the language. Now, I think the reason is that we say on purpose.
Right.
On purpose, and then we contrast that with by accident. Purposely, accidentally, on purpose. And then I always thought of it as an adolescent usage. Now, that's an interesting thing. It's sort of a vogue expression. I have heard my daughters say on accident. I have corrected them, and they have done what most teenagers do, which is to blithely ignore me. But I've always associated that with teenage talk. Now, the funny thing is, with vogue expressions, you will occasionally hear, and I hear around Dallas and around the country, people who are in their 40s and 50s aping teenage talk. And, for example, no longer using cool in the way, saying cool, but even saying cool. Cool, which is kind of a young person's pronunciation.
Or and coolness.
There are a lot of things like this that are generational. Coolness is a good example. But my friend David Foster Wallace, when we talked about this and at some length in an interview, he said it's as if these middle-aged people are trying to belong to a club to which they can never gain membership.
Never again, anyway.
I think that's right.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next to Laura in Corsicana. Hi, Laura.
Hi, I'm confused. I tend to say, I'll start a sentence, when one wakes up in the morning, one should have coffee. And then if I want to continue, you keep saying one, and it sounds, I don't know, distant or something. And so should one say, when one wakes up in the morning, he should have coffee? When one wakes up in the morning, he or she should have coffee? Or should one say, when one wakes up in the morning, they should have coffee?
Well, let's all agree that everybody needs coffee in the morning.
Yes.
Well, I disagree. I have Diet Dr. Pepper. But
even in the morning?
Oh, that's my morning drink, yeah.
All right.
I'm a Texan.
The drink of intellectuals.
Well, I've got the answer for you, Laura. The thing to use is the impersonal you. When you wake up in the morning, you need some coffee. And that's the impersonal you. And it's a very handy thing. When I wrote, co-authored a couple of years ago, The Rules of Golf in Plain English, and the actual rules of golf say, if a player hits his ball into a ladder water hazard, he must drop within two club lengths of the nearest point of entry. And in my research in the rules of golf, I found the original rules of 1744 use the impersonal you, the second person. If you hit your ball into a ladder water hazard, you must drop, which completely solves the problem of sexist language. And there's nothing at all sloppy about the impersonal you.
That's a very elegant solution.
Yeah, it really is.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Our email address is think@kera.org. I'm reading an email as I'm speaking and getting myself into all kinds of problems. Let's go to Bailey in Plano. Hey, Bailey.
Hi. I'm wondering if you can settle a longstanding debate with my family members in my life. Can you please explain to me the proper usage of the word myself?
Well, myself has two legitimate uses, according to traditional grammar. One is as a reflexive pronoun, I hurt myself, or, you start with I. The other is as an intensive, so it's either a reflexive pronoun or an intensive. I myself have had that problem, or I hurt myself. It's going to be one of those two. But you don't say, My wife and myself would like to invite you to dinner. I mean, that's very bad usage, and it's very typical. I think it started with politicians who were getting corrected about misusing I and me, and so they decided to use myself. It's kind of like not knowing whether to say affect or effect, so you say impact, and you're always wrong. And that kind of happens with myself. By the way, Chris, I want to pause for a moment. And just remember William Sapphire.
You know, I was going to ask you about that. We just lost him last month.
Last month he died at the age of 79. He, for 30 years, did more than anybody else in this country to keep an active interest in the English language alive for people who really enjoyed his Sunday column in the New York Times. And his contributions were tremendous, and he and I were friends, and I miss him.
You know, the Times now publishes on a regular basis their internal comments to reporters about the use of language. Have you had a chance to check those out?
No.
And I found it online before, and I was trying to find it today so that I could tell you exactly where to find it, and of course I couldn't. But it's an interesting little thing to look at. And I was just wondering if whether when you're going through and looking at papers and marking them up, if it becomes hard with the level of acuity you have for language errors to enjoy reading anything that is not written to your standard.
Well, I've been telling lawyers recently that I became, I suppose, really aware of this about 6 months ago, that I cannot read six consecutive words in most lawyers' briefs without being offended in some way and significantly bothered or irked. And so I tried an experiment with some major firms writing. How far could I read without being in some way bothered by the literary shortfalls, whether it's just not knowing how to punctuate, not knowing how to hyphenate, not knowing how to capitalize, just all kinds of little mechanical problems. But I contrast that with reading something like The Economist or The New Yorker, in which I never need a pen, nor do I never feel the need to mark anything. I can sit back and read with great pleasure, and I'm never thinking about the writer. The problem with this whole idea of intelligibility is I can always figure out what the lawyers mean. Well, that's not quite true.
Probably.
Well, sometimes you can't figure out what the argument is. But I can typically figure out what they mean. But instead of focusing on the argument, if I or any other intelligent reader, a judge, is focused instead on the writer, that is, why doesn't this person know how to hyphenate? Or why doesn't this person know that words prefixed with N-O-N, non, do not have a hyphen in American English, or pretrial is not a hyphenated word, why don't they look it up in the dictionary? And you start thinking about the writer, then that's causing credibility problems for the writer. But that's right. It's very difficult to read very far a lot of things without being pretty irked.
We'll talk more about this in just a few minutes with Brian Garner. He is our guest also for the second hour of Think Today. This is a rare thing and quite a treat for us here. If you would like to become a member of KERA and perhaps receive one of Brian's books as your thank you gift, you can give us a call now at 1-800-456-5372. You can also make your contribution online at kera.org. It just takes a couple of minutes to become a member of KERA, whether it's for the first time or whether you are renewing a membership. And of course, we're always happy to receive an additional gift. If you've heard about one of these thank you gifts today and think to yourself, I've got to have that, and I've got to have it signed. Then definitely give us a call. Nilifer, if we could open Brian's mic back up. I almost forgot about the answers to the quiz. And we can't raise money without giving people their quiz answers.
And I can play along too.
All right, here we go. Now Jeff and I are in competition, which is never a pretty thing.
All right, we've got the three grammar questions first about lie and lay. His genius lay dormant or laid dormant for many years?
Lay.
I said laid.
It is, in fact, lay. And the weird thing about these words is that lay is the past tense of lie. So you lie dormant today, you lay dormant yesterday.
Mm.
Number two, please lie down or please lay down?
I said lie.
That's what I said, too.
Yeah, you're both right.
Okay, good.
You lay the book on the table.
And by the way, you lie out in the sun. although yesterday you lay out in the sun.
But
the weird thing is,
I never lay out in the sun or lie out in the sun.
Well, you can be arrested.
I'm Irish.
That's right. But lie is a present tense verb, and lay is a present tense verb. But lay, this is what makes it so confusing for people. Lay is the past tense of lie, is a different word. Number three, if he had laid quiet or lain quiet, he wouldn't have been hurt.
I was less sure about this one, but I said lain.
I as well said lain.
It is, in fact, lain. The past participle of lie is lay. So the verbs are conjugated, lie, lay, lain, and lay, laid, laid. So please lay the book on the table. I have laid the book on the table, but this one is lain in number three, if he had lain quiet. Now, spelling.
Oh, no.
This is my thing. Okay.
It's
and
not
then we got to go quickly because we have to raise some
yes,
money.
Okay.
Anoint.
A-N-O-I-N-T.
Yeah, that's what I had.
Yeah.
All right, you're going to have to spell the next one. And I'll
well,
let me spell the last one.
Right.
We can write them down and pass them to Brian.
A lot of people make it A-N-N, but it's A-N-O. That's right.
Yeah.
Ecstasy.
I can't.
You want to do it?
No, go ahead.
E-C... S-T-A-S-Y?
That's right.
Very good, Chris. I'm getting an X on both of those, but I'll do the last one.
That's all right. Oh, all right is the third.
Yeah. A-L-R-I-G-H-T.
No, it's two words.
It is, in fact, two words.
It is, see? It,
very sloppy.
That's
to
okay,
make that
though,
one
Jeff.
Word. I'm sorry,
no,
Jeff.
Sorry.
I studied. I had the books for days, and I was perusing them.
She's the host. Yeah, I can spell check.
All right. We will jump back in here to fundraising mode, and we'll be back with Brian for the second hour. So if you are still on the line, ordinarily we would let you go now, but if you're waiting on hold, hang out with us for a minute because we will get to your call in just a moment.
800-456-5372. Online at KERA.org. Listen, we have a bunch of thank yous I want to talk about really quickly from Brian Garner. At the $120 membership level, you can get your very own copy of Garner on Language and Writing. At the $225 membership level, and we're closing the drive out here. We've only got $158,500 left to raise and still counting. So it's happening quickly, folks. So your $225 contribution right now is huge to help finish this drive. And we'll send you a copy of Garner's Modern American Usage, your very own copy for you to enjoy and to reference at your leisure. And then some very special thank you gifts. Garner's Black's Law Dictionary. It's the 9th edition. We've got one regular edition, one deluxe edition. Each of those are available autographed at the $350 membership level. The first person who contributes $350 for that gets it. So, the first two people. And then at the $500 membership level, very special signed copies of Making Your Case, The Art of Persuading Judges, co-authored by Antonin Scalia. You might recognize his name as someone who's on the Supreme Court. And Brian A. Garner. These are both autographed. And you can get your very own copy or a very special gift copy for someone if you join at the $500 membership level. So call 800-456-5372 to get those, and you can get the other two online as well at KERA.org.
1-800-456-5372 is the telephone number to call. Again, as Jeff said, you can go to KERA.org and make a contribution there. We do have really fantastic thank you gifts today. We know a lot of you don't make a contribution for the thank you gifts, or a lot of you make your gift to KERA and then go out and buy the book. You can do that however you want to do it. We put these here in case this is the thing that causes you to pick up the phone. I will say, Jeff and I have talked about this, Garner's Modern American Usage is a regular tool for us here in this office, and we make sure that if it's borrowed, it gets back to our desk.
Absolutely. I mean, I've got the AP style books and the broadcast style book, and I'm always having to reference those for punctuation or possessives, things like that. For the very limited amount of writing that I do that actually sees the web. But the usage book is so handy. I use it every week on anything you ever wanted to know, because obviously from the quiz, you can tell that I'm not the expert. You know, this is the expert right here. This book in here in the studio is the expert.
And the truth is, if you really are a snoot, as Brian has coined the term, you can sit through this and have a glass of wine and actually have some pretty good straight through reading. But that may be just me.
Hey, we know our audience. And if you appreciate this kind of conversation, if you appreciate the show, if you listen regularly, if KERA is important to you, and we've gotten many emails this hour, and we're going to get to some of those in the next hour and take some more as well, where people are saying, I would turn off the radio if I didn't have KERI. I wouldn't even listen to the radio if KERI wasn't there. And that came from someone who signed their email as a friend of KERI. So if you really appreciate the station, you can join at the friends level, $1,500, and you can pick up one of these autographed copies of Making Your Case. But you got to call to do it, 800-456-5372.
It's a very quick transaction, very efficient. You can get through it in just about 2 minutes. So by the time we come back in about 2.5 minutes with Brian Garner, you won't even have to miss any of this great content. So if you're waiting on a question, you can definitely get that done. Again, the telephone number, 1-800-456-5372. We are online, as always, at kera.org. Thanks.
The Think team includes assistant producer Betsy Lewis and engineer Nilofer Arsala. Our senior producer is Jeff Whittington. Learn more about today's show, find out about upcoming programs, and download our free daily podcasts at kera.org/think. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@kera.org.